One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the place where musical memories turn into stories. We extract biography from our guests using the songs that have touched their lives. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for listening. My guest this episode is Katie Haas. She's vice president and head of Florida business operations for the Boston Red Sox. That means she's the head honcho for all Red Sox business operations here in Southwest Florida. She's also active in the local business and nonprofit communities. She lives in Fort Myers with her husband Danny and their two young kids. And while she's one of my best friends, and I've picked my kid up at her house more than once, we've never really talked, and I'm looking forward to doing that, starting right now. Hey there, Katie.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
It's nice to sort of talk to you longer than 3 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's get started. In your email to me, you said, "Don't get me started on your unhealthy obsession with Harry Connick Jr. when you were 9 years old." So that's exactly where we're going to start.
Of course.
Tell us that.
I honestly don't even know where I got a Harry Connick tape when I was 8 years old. Maybe my brother had left it in my room or thrown it away. And, you know,
older brother?
I have three older brothers. I'm the only girl. So I literally was raised with hand-me-downs, clothes, shoes, and music. My brother forcing me to listen to Pink Floyd's The Wall in his attic bedroom for hours on end. I will still never get those images from my head. That is not one of my songs today, thank God. But yes, and it was not even it was all just instrumental. It was just Harry playing the piano.
Yeah.
And it was one of his first albums when he was, I think it was called 20 or something like that, because he did it by his age. And I remember sitting down at the Epson word processor at 8 years old in my brother's room and writing him a fan letter.
Oh, just based on that tape?
I don't know what I was thinking.
Did it have a picture on it? So was his
his
visual charm part of
of course. Of course it was. But the Epson computer was actually not hooked up to a printer. So I'm not sure what I was thinking about writing this letter that never was mailed.
Oh, so you never sent it?
No. But it's so funny that I still can remember that as an eight-year-old girl sitting down. To this day, I still love Harry Connick Jr. I've seen him perform live before. I remember.
Do you ever get to meet him? Seems like,
I probably should. You know how sad this is? I taped the episode of Cheers that he guest starred on as Woody's cousin, obsessed with Rebecca.
So like that's the
craziness of
part.
Me. Yes.
Okay.
So that's where that's where I've crossed the line to beyond. The funny thing is I don't really listen to him anymore. I don't watch his show on TV. I don't listen to it. But it was for whatever reason, and I think that's probably kickstarted to my love of jazz music as well. So very odd for an 8-year-old girl, but that's me.
So what was the musical background of your childhood besides Pink Floyd in the attic with your brother?
The first concert I ever went to was Peter, Paul, and Mary. I don't remember it, but my parents told me it was going to be great. And besides Puff the Magic Dragon, was it really great for a 5-year-old kid?
Where was this?
Van Wezel in Sarasota.
Oh, okay.
That's where I grew up. My mom had tons of records, and so she always had music playing when I was a kid. So things that I remember are things like Neil Diamond, They're Coming to America, and that crescendo and
he was all crescendo
again and little kid I yeah. get the goosebumps. I think I'm getting goosebumps thinking about that mm-hmm. build up he would do. But yeah, we always had music playing, and I'm probably shouldn't say this in NPR studios, but again, as a kid from the back seat hearing the theme music to All Things Considered and I'm Bob Edwards coming on are like the worst things that a young child can hear in their life. But now, of course, I've grown up and, you know, I force my kids to listen to NPR every single day in the car. So it's funny, the theme songs that you remember from the NPR days that are now a part of your life as an adult. So
is there a theme song to a TV or movie that you can I mean, I'm not going to force you to sing it, but is there a theme song to a TV or a movie that you know the words to straight through?
Probably too many, Mike. I probably should admit that. Oh, I could tell you The Golden Girls. I actually just texted some of the lines from the Golden Girls song when our mutual friend Lydia texted me and said, "Thanks for being a friend." And so, of course, me being the smarty that I am, I started literally texting her every line from the Golden Girls song. And I said, "Oh, wait, you probably weren't talking about Golden Girls, were you?" So, yes, I know too many theme songs. I'm not going to sing any for you because it wouldn't be pretty. But, yes, I do.
What is your favorite song to sing? And does the answer to the question change if you're alone?
Interesting. Well, anything that comes on the radio, alone in the car, I'll sing along to. It's funny, the one song that if I had four songs, the fourth song I could have had is probably the one that I sing most often, and I've sang it to my kids pretty much every day of their life. And my 4-year-old son has requests it every night, which would be Joni Mitchell, A Case of You. And I sing that all the time. And that's probably the one I sing most often. The ones that I probably don't want or admit, especially in front of my kids that I'm singing, I used to have a Tupac poster on my wall, as every young girl did in the 90s. So whenever those songs come on the Sirius XM Fly station and the kids aren't in the car, I turn it up extra loud. And
you know what just occurred to me is that, you know, we ask people what their, you know, the early memories are of music, and a lot of times they talk about their mom singing. You're doing that, you know, like your kid's going to grow up and maybe he'll be on a show like this someday and it'll be you singing to him. Isn't that cool?
It is. Well, my on my dad's side, his sister actually was an opera singer and sang at Carnegie Hall. And she was also an actress and was in a few movies and used to be on One Life to Live. So there is some genetic voice talent. I didn't get it, unfortunately. And then my mom was actually in a singing group called the Legatos when I was a kid in Sarasota.
Wow.
So it was just a group of women that got together volunteering. They didn't get paid, do anything.
What kind of music were they singing?
I can't even remember, to be honest with you. But they would go to like nursing homes and different events, and then they would sing as a group. And it was really nice. It was inspiring that she found the music to inspire her. So,
if you had to dig as deeply as you could for an early musical memory, what would pop into your head?
Oh, boy. The earliest musical memory I have. Oh, man. It probably is my brother trapping me in the attic, making me listen to Pink Floyd.
Do you have an affinity for Pink Floyd at all in life
now?
No.
He was always he's my oldest brother. He's the colonel in the army. He's so different from all the rest of us because he's always been on this straight path, and he listens to music so different from all the rest of us in terms of rock. And he and his wife go all over the world practically to see Big Head Todd and the Monsters. They're one of those people. Similar to Fishhead, but not the same. So, yeah, he exposed me to a lot of music, Stevie Ray Vaughan, things like that, that I otherwise never probably would have heard. Whereas my other two brothers would watch BET on the weekends, and we'd listen to Joe Mama Johnson and the Quiet Storm on Power Pig 93.3 out of Tampa growing up.
I remember
up.
Power Pig.
Yeah.
It reached all the way down here.
Yeah.
Was that Harry Connick tape the first music that you owned yourself?
No, it's funny. So I do remember the first – I'm pretty sure the first tape I had, we went to Specs Music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Paula Abdul, Forever Your Girl. And then my brother went to college in New York City, and I had never been exposed to bootleg anything before. And we were walking down the streets of Manhattan, and there was a folding table of all of this music that was brand new, especially to me, being from Sarasota, small town, 80s Sarasota. And there were Madonna, The Immaculate Collection, and Janet Jackson Rhythm Nation tapes. And I took those home and literally wore them out.
which they weren't good quality to begin with. They were bootlegs, but they were quickly worn out. So
okay, well, let's get to your first song. What is it?
My first song would be Eric Clapton, "Layla Unplugged."
Mm-hmm.
And this one for me is more of a negative connotation in that I had this single. This was probably – he may have been around one of the first groups to do Unplugged on MTV.
Yeah, I think so.
Very
close
to the beginning. So it's very unique. And so I know it was very popular. And again, I had just the single that came in the little cardboard wrapper. And it was during a time that all my brothers played sports, but the brother who's the closest to me in age was playing football. And every Friday night, we'd have to drive somewhere across the state of Florida for his football game. And it was at a time that my parents were going through a really difficult time in their marriage and subsequently got divorced a year later after this. But even that memory of sitting in the back seat of the caravan with the two of them in the front seat not getting along very well and having adult conversations / arguments, and I just put my Walkman, my headphones of my Sony Walkman on and just played this single over and over and over and over again, more so to drown out the conversation and to get away from the moment that I really didn't want to be in and be a part of. And and it's funny, whenever I hear this song, even 26 years later, it still brings me right back to that caravan. So,
All right, this is Eric Clapton's "Layla Unplugged." It's Katie Haas's first song choice on this episode of Three Song Story. Were the lyrics to that song resonating with you about your parents, or were you?
You know, it's funny. I just listening to that, I thought, oh, well, maybe they were.
Honestly,
I wasn't smart enough in fifth grade probably
to put two and two together.
But that's it's funny. I was just thinking the same thing. And I know it's – and when my – especially my mother listens to this, she's going to have no idea of this impact of this song, nor will she realize probably that I have this memory at all. But then it was funny listening to this. I then remembered like – you know, a year later, I went to the Keys with my dad, and again, I went to Specs and got a single of Tag Team Whoomp There It Is that he and I listened all the way from Sarasota to Ducky. So again, there's more memories that came after that with the parents in better times. So
what was up with the singles?
I don't know. I guess it's just like even now on iTunes, you look and you're like, oh, 99 cents, $1.29. That's so cheap, and you don't.
Right.
You don't think it adds up.
When was the last time you purchased music that had a physical form?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I used to probably up until the mid-2000s, I would say. I used to do burning of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. We were going to go to a John Mayer concert last summer because – He's replaced Harry. Sorry, John has replaced you. I just love his songs. I swear he lives in my closet. So many of his lyrics pertain to me, I think, personally. But I realized that a lot of my John Mayer stuff was on CD, and so I got out my big thick book.
Yeah.
You know, you used to keep them all in one place.
Oh yeah.
And the soft book, and then I went, oh God, I don't have a CD player in my house. I didn't have any place to play even the CDs anymore. So it's had to be probably 15 years since I bought a real actual CD.
Wow. Quick aside, you're an NPR junkie. Do you ever listen to World Cafe?
I do.
Did you hear Talia Schlanger's interview with John Mayer from about 6 months ago?
No, but I need to search it.
Put that on your list.
I'm going to have to.
Seriously. Can you remember the first music that moved you? Like it caused some sort of emotion to come out of you that you were like, wow, that's interesting.
Hmm. It's a good lead into the second song, but there are songs that for whatever reason give me goosebumps when I hear them, mm-hmm. and I can't explain why. There was one song, and for me it harkens a memory of my brother. It's so stupid.
We love stupid on this show.
Well, like it's me. It shouldn't have any meaning for me. It was a special moment for him, but it has meaning for me. He went to Georgetown, and he was the manager of the basketball team. And on the last home game of his senior season, they bring out all the seniors to center court and with their families and everything. And I just remember seeing him out there with my mom, and they were playing the Verve. I think it was Verve, Bittersweet Symphony.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, again, I think it was so emotional for me for numerous reasons of, you know, my brother, right, my parents got divorced the year my brother went to college. So we had this very special, strong connection, my brother and I did. And it was such a rocky time for me, and he was there to help me through it all, even from afar in D.C. And then just seeing my mom and being out there on the court, and I think it was super special for an emotional moment for me, for sure, that, again, makes me smile now thinking about it. But again, they probably they don't even remember it.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, it's some special memory. So.
Funny how it's like it burns it into your – I think we're learning now with brain science that it's literally burning in, or, you know, it's causing physical changes to your – that's what a memory is.
Yeah.
Okay, mixtapes, mix CDs. Did you ever make those?
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of mixtapes. It's funny. I had friends that I would drive to school in high school, so they would make mixtapes for the car. I had boys who liked me and would give me mixtapes.
Like, did any of them ever nudge you in the right directions with their mixtape?
No.
Sometimes I was like,
what the heck
maybe
is this guy
you
listening
wrong direction.
To?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What is this terrible music? that did. It pushed me in the complete opposite direction away from them. But yeah, and it was funny too. I had a coworker years ago who was leaving the company, and she was putting together a CD, and she said, "What's your favorite song? Because I want to put it on my CD to remember all my coworkers."
What
by.
A cool idea!
Yes. So when she left, but she could listen to this CD and think of, you know, me for my song, you for your song.
What was your song?
My second song.
Oh,
isn't that good?
Well, then I think we have to
take that. Is
that
a lead-in or is that a lead-in?
I think we have to take the serendipitous pivot that you've just created to move into your second song. Let me move my script over where I can see that part of the script. Okay, so this is well, you tell us what this is.
So, again, I am a very unique, odd child. I loved Harry Connick Jr. at 8 years old. I was selected to participate in the National Young Leaders Program when I was in high school. So I think I was a rising senior in high school. And it's basically a program where you go to Washington, D.C. for 2 weeks with kids from all over the country your same age. And it was a great experience. We stayed on the campus of American University. And, you know, you go and you meet with your congressmen and your senators, and they basically give you a binder and a map and a whole meeting agenda schedule, and they drop you on a corner in D.C., and you basically have to figure it out yourself. And just really awesome program that I was very fortunate to be a part of. And again, I don't know why I remember this stuff. Can't remember what I had for breakfast today, but I remember when I was 17 years old flying U.S. Air on my way to Washington, D.C., and in the in-flight magazine in the seat pocket, there was an article in the magazine and about this – I can't remember who wrote it, but he said, "This is the best jazz CD I've ever listened to, experienced, and if you like jazz music, you have to get this." So one of my days during the 2 weeks, I was found myself alone wandering the streets of Georgetown and popped into a old record CD shop and found this CD. And this song is my very favorite song on this album. And, I didn't have a sleep machine. We didn't have iPhones to go to bed to or anything like that. So when I was a kid, I listened to songs and music to fall asleep to. And so this one was always – this is only six songs on the whole album, and they were perfect for falling asleep to. So I think that's probably why I listened to it for so many years of my life going to bed. But it's Johnny Hartman. He's doing the singing with John Coltrane, and it's called Lush Life. And it was written by Billy Strayhorn, and it's a fantastic song. Lady Gaga recently covered it. My four-year-old prefers that version. Again, he's going to be a weirdo like me, I think. But yeah, it's one of my favorites.
And it was on the CD that your coworker friend.
That's the one. I said, if you have a song to remember me by, it would be John Coltrane, Johnny Hartman. I loved Coltrane too. He's definitely right up there with John Mayer in my top five for sure. So,
when you read that magazine article on the plane and it said if you're into jazz, were you into jazz by then?
I was.
Okay,
I was, and I think it was because of the gateway of Harry Connick Jr.
Right,
exposing me to that, because I think I had some Wynton Marsalis tapes too. My brother went to school in New Orleans. He went to college at Tulane. So, again, we would visit him often and we're exposed to a lot of the street music out there. And it's, you know, it's the birthplace of jazz. So, again, I was lucky to experience that early on in life. And I think that's made an impact on me now. But
All right. Let's hear it. This is Lush Life, performed by Johnny Hartman and John Coltrane. You're listening to Three Song Stories. It's biography through music.
Awkward song for a 16-year-old girl, right?
So besides falling asleep to it as a 16-year-old and having suggested it for your friend to put on the mix CD, does it connect you to other memories throughout your life? If it's one of your songs, did it bring up any other instances?
I don't think so. And again, listening to the lyrics of Layla and thinking about those, how they can connect. Obviously, I didn't have any problems with alcoholism or anything like that. But I heard Lady Gaga tell Howard Stern a few years ago that when she covered that song, that it was written by Billy Strayhorn, who was a closeted gay and wrote that. And when you listen to the lyrics in that context, you probably understand it a lot better.
Wasn't the first line living a gay life or something like that?
I used to visit all the very gay places.
That's what it is.
Those come what may places.
Yeah, which I interpreted totally differently. But now that you're saying that, then yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it could. But I think that he just couldn't. I mean, that was decades ago, and he just wasn't able to be who he was, and probably found himself living a lush life and surrounded by others that were feeling the same way. It's for whatever reason, the Coltrane, you know, interlude, especially at the end there, it's just that's what always gets me. It's more of the music than the real words. There's a few songs on that album that are great, probably kinder, sweeter, nicer lyrics I could have chosen from. But I think it's more of the Coltrane that always gets me there.
Like comfort music.
Yes, yes. Mm. Coltrane always comforts me for whatever reason. So,
okay. You mentioned that you already kind of mentioned the song that would have made it number four. What did you say it was?
Joni Mitchell, A Case of You.
Is there a fifth? Is there another one?
Ooh, I don't know. there's so many songs. There's so many songs that I love and I think about, and we'll get to the third song. But even I was thinking of other songs that take me back. And someone said, "Oh, you know, you've worked for the Red Sox for 20 years. You have to do Sweet Caroline from Neil Diamond." And I was like, "Oh boy, no, I don't." I've heard that song at least 3,000 times in my lifetime, and I'm good.
Do you ever dream about it?
No.
Thankfully, no.
No.
Okay. When was the last time you did karaoke?
Drunk. About 15 years ago,
okay,
probably.
Okay, so not a part of your life these
And it
days.
Was Darling Nikki by Prince. Probably not a part of karaoke. That was probably the reason it was my last time. It was They said, never again are you allowed to do karaoke after
that. Where was that?
In Sarasota. I was out with my brothers and their spouses, and yeah, it was a lot of fun, but no, we don't do that anymore.
Where are you at musically today? Like, what's in your most, you know, what do you hear the most? What do you play the most? What's your go-to, like, Pandora channel, if you have one?
Well, I'm forced to be at the mercy of my 8-year-old daughter most times these days, as you have a young daughter, you
yes.
know. I don't know how and where she hears the songs.
Isn't it amazing?
And how she knows all the words.
Isn't it amazing?
I don't get it.
I don't ever turn on commercial radio.
Me neither.
And yet Gwen knows the...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I totally agree.
They're beaming it into their heads.
To see... Well, I actually have on video my 4-year-old son saying, Alexa, play Wiggle. And she says, playing Wiggle by Snoop Dogg. So, and then he proceeds to sing along and dance around the room. But... in terms of probably the most recent iTunes purchases, again, for my kids, they love Drake, God's Plan. That's been on heavy rotation in my house the last few months. The last few albums I've purchased, Lady Gaga, we saw her at Fenway in September, and she was
I'm a big fan.
She's fantastic.
She's amazing.
She's such a performer.
Yeah,
you know?
She's talented. She's so talented.
She can do it all. And so she's incredible. And then Beyonce, Lemonade, I think is probably one of the most artistically fantastic albums I've ever not heard, but literally experienced, you know, through the ears and through the eyes with her whole video book that comes essentially with the album, too. It's really fascinating. And I don't know if other women are out there who listen to the whole thing start to finish. You get to the end and she got back together with Jay-Z and you're like, what are you thinking? Like, I was just rallying with you and you were telling him off.
You know, one of my other guests that we've recorded but not yet played actually refers to that album as being the most complete storytelling
yes.
album that he can think. I've never listened to it.
It's incredible. And I would recommend not even listening to the songs, but with the album comes the whole video of the whole album. And there's a lot of poetry that she mixes in that otherwise you wouldn't hear if you're just listening to the songs. So it's fantastic.
Is there a band that you've recently discovered that is new to your musical world?
No, again, being told what to listen to by an 8-year-old really limits my abilities to seek out any cool bands. No, I can't think of anything, and my husband and I are always so busy that we don't get to do too much live music very often, unfortunately. But I mean that I remember again growing up, I went to Lilith Fair, lots of festivals, Bare Naked Ladies, John Mayer. I've sung on stage with Kenny Chesney twice.
Oh, really?
Yes,
twice. Did
twice.
He remember you?
No, no. He I knew one of his production managers, and so he was always kind enough to get us tickets. And the first time he did, he said, come here at this time. And all of a sudden he goes, okay, let's go. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he just grabs me. And all of a sudden we're in front of 25,000 people at the, what was it called at that time? The Ice Palace in Tampa, where mm-hmm. the Lightning plays. And we're singing Cheeseburger in Paradise right next to Kenny Chesney in front of all these people. And then we went and saw another one of his concerts probably a year later, and he did the same thing to me again. And this time Kenny high-fived me, so I assume I did better. But
Jimmy Buffett, thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down?
All the way. I'm a Florida native.
Okay.
You can't be a Florida native and not love Jimmy and listen to – I was actually just the other day listening to A Pirate Looks at 40. That's the greatest song ever.
I feel like I got to go back now and listen to some Buffett. It's been too long for me. He hasn't made it into this part of my life. But during the 90s when I was in my 20s, he was all over the place.
It's a great – the Jimmy Buffett Pandora station is great. Having the back door open and the kids in the pool, and I say, Alexa, play Jimmy Buffett Pandora. And it's such a good mix of great weekend Florida music. So try that next time.
Is there a band that you that you're a big fan of that you think our listeners may never have heard of that you'd want to give like a shout out to or a nod to?
I don't even know if they're together anymore, and then I'll tell the reason why. Ida, A-D-A, is the name of the band. I was exposed to them way back in high school. And again, I didn't have many albums because I didn't know where to get them. But it was a husband and wife group, and I think they were out of Virginia, and they were fantastic. And now the woman who was the wife and still married to the husband, I believe, I think this is how the story goes, she is Elizabeth Mitchell. And she's like a folk singer and does kids albums now under also the group name You Are My Flower, I think it's called. So I listened to their, you know, it wasn't rock or heavy rock by any means, but it was a little more aggressive as when I was younger. And then now I'm able to expose my kids to her singing in that, as well as Marlo Thomas's Free to Be You and Me, which...
Wow, that's a name I haven't thought of in a long time.
Oh, boy. Don't get me started on knowing all the words to all the songs. That one was magical.
Do you have a favorite band?
A favorite band? I'm just trying to think. Who do I – oh, my gosh. That's so hard.
Right. Well, some people just say can't do it. Some people go Beatles. Most people go Beatles or can't do it, actually.
I like the Rolling Stones. I do love the Rolling Stones. I think I like more of their songs more than anything else. But if I had to pick one, I always loved the Bare Naked Ladies growing up, and Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. I think that's a hard one.
Did you ever come across Moxie Fruvis? If you
mm-mm.
like Bare Naked Ladies,
mm-mm.
I'll have to hook you up. They're also Canadian. They preceded Bare Naked Ladies by just a little bit. They actually sing the harmonies on the end of If I Had $1 Million. Like there's
okay.
like that chorus at the end. It's this other Canadian band that was a little less mainstreamable than the Bare Naked Ladies were. But anyway,
I actually
really
heard
like
on NPR a few years ago this. I think they were sisters, and I got their album First Aid Kit. Have you ever heard of them?
I've heard of them, yeah.
I couldn't
think of a song.
They're like they're somewhere from Scandinavia or something, but they're pretty good too.
What about ABBA? They were on the news this morning. They apparently got back together, made two songs. ABBA do anything for you?
Oh, that's another one of my mom's records.
Ah, your mom's probably happy today then.
Yes. That was definitely one in the closet, and she also had a lot of show tunes, so I remember listening to West Side Story.
Hmm.
Original Broadway album over and over and over. And yes, so that was ABBA was definitely in. And Christopher Cross.
There was half eye roll there.
there was a big eye roll for ABBA. Same with Christopher Cross. My dad played the Christopher Cross sailing tape on repeat all the way from Sarasota to New Orleans. We drove straight through the night for my brother's college graduation.
Yacht rock.
So none of us in my family can hear Christopher Cross anymore or ever again without first thinking of our dad singing Sailing at the top of his lungs all the way to New Orleans in the middle of the night. But we just can't listen to him, period.
Okay, it's time for song number three.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about all this childhood stuff, and it seems strange probably to your listeners that I've been married for over 10 years and haven't talked about any of that part and chapter of my life. But this was actually the first song of the first dance song that my husband and I had at our wedding. We entered the room. We actually had a reception at Fenway Park. If you can believe that. We're super baseball, right?
He's baseball too, right?
Yes. My husband works for the Orioles. I work for the Red Sox. Just logos on paychecks, people. We totally get along. It's fine. But yes, we did. We had our reception at Fenway. At the time, he worked for the Red Sox too. And we got a pretty good discount on the room. And most all of our guests were not from Boston, so they thought it was super special.
Sure,
we were doing this. He's from Kentucky, and so we decided that we would come out to the theme song from one of our mutually favorite movies, Eastbound and Down by Jerry Reed, which turned some heads in Boston.
That is awesome.
When we walked in,
it took me a second. I was like, having to do the math on what you were saying and imagining what you were describing.
Yeah, Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
And so this next song was our first dance song, and then our closing song, which again has, which I love and makes me think of our last dance, which was Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra. But this song is Van Morrison, who I also love. I continuously, there's a few stations that I pull on Pandora a lot, and I love to put in Van Morrison as well. And it's called Someone Like You.
All right. Well, this is Van Morrison's Someone Like You. You're listening to Three Song Stories.
I went to a wedding once, and the first song was Stroke It. So I think I did a pretty good job picking the most vanilla first dance song I could. And just looking at those lyrics, I mean, he must have sat down and thought, okay, what can I write that I will get royalties from now until my great-great-grandchildren are dead for the first wedding song, right? I mean, that's just the most perfect wedding song.
Have you guys had a chance to dance to that song since?
No. He travels 200 days a year, so if we're in the same room together, we're usually not dancing.
But maybe you wound up at a wedding dancing off to the side of somebody else's wedding.
We have one tomorrow in Marco Island, so maybe
this will be it.
Yes, fingers crossed.
How did you wind up in baseball for your whole career, basically, right?
Yeah.
I have to ask that question while we're here.
I actually, when I was a senior in high school, started working for the Sarasota Red Sox, which was the minor league team that the Boston Red Sox owned in Sarasota. So I'd get out of school at 1 o'clock and head to the ballpark, and I did everything from payroll to tarp duty.
Were you into baseball, or was it just a job you got?
No, it was honestly, I think it was, I was predisposed to trend towards sports, having the three older brothers, and I was dragged to every sporting
event
known to man.
Were you a sports person?
I played sports, but I wasn't really good at any of them. Like, I dabbled in everything, but never excelled in any one sport. And so I went to college in Boston at Northeastern, and they have a co-op program where you work half the year and you go to school half the year. So I ended up getting lucky and doing my co-ops with the Red Sox in Boston and ending up working full-time and going to school full-time after my co-op had ended. So I have been very lucky to be with the Red Sox almost my whole career, with the exception of 2 years. I work for an NBA team in North Carolina.
Did you could you have imagined early on that you would be doing what you're doing now?
No. I never thought in a million years I would have anything to do with overseeing construction or opening a new ballpark or anything like that. I feel very blessed to have even been able to do that, because not many people in sports or otherwise get to build new facilities.
Yeah. So you were in charge of when they built JetBlue?
Yes. I was on the ground here every day and oversaw the transition from the old ballpark downtown to the new ballpark here at Fenway South. So,
Are you a dancer?
Maybe. Why?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out. You know, some people like myself are not necessarily big on dancing, but you know, like if you're out with the friends, are you guys boogieing?
I can if I have enough liquid courage. I think again, your questions are just taking me back and remembering again my weary childhood of, in my own head, choreographing a whole routine to Axel's theme from Beverly Hills Cop. I had it down. I had the whole routine down. Maybe I'll show you later in the parking lot. I don't know if we have enough time. But yes. Every little girl wants to be a dancer. Then she wants to be a singer. And actually, before I got into sports, and my mom can corroborate this, and I even had my logo drawn, everything, I wanted to own my own record company.
It's not too late.
Music industry is very is going places, but no.
Craziest concert experience. You mentioned, you know, Lil Affairs and things like that from back in the day. Is there one that was just sort of, you know, got crazy?
Well, so what I used to do at Fenway before I moved to Fort Myers was to oversee the operations of a lot of concerts or work in tandem with a lot of other folks within the organization to put on these concerts. The very first one we ever had in the history of Fenway Park was Bruce Springsteen, and that's something that I'll just never forget. And it was so spectacular. And I mean, it's Bruce, first of all, and he plays 3-hour shows with like hardly any breaks. So if you love Bruce, you're in heaven. If you love music, you're in heaven. It's great. Very stressful because we really didn't understand what was going to happen, didn't know what we were doing, but it all came through in the end. But other concerts that came through, one of them was Phish. And I was one – it was the last day before I was going on maternity leave. And so my last child I had was 10 pounds at birth. So you can imagine how large I looked with this child in my belly. It was almost 9 pounds at birth. And I was a mess and could barely walk. It was terrible. She really enjoyed the – it was a Phish show sandwiched in between a Dave Matthews show. So I was walking out on the field in front of the stage before gates opened during sound check, and she was going crazy in my belly. So she loved it. But at the Phish show, I was in a jacket because in Boston in June, it's still freezing cold. And no one could – like people thought I was literally smuggling bowling
right,
balls.
Right, right, right.
And so I'm just leaning up against one of the brick columns outside of Fenway on the street and waiting for the gates to open, and they finally do, and I'm just standing there. And it's obvious I work there. I have a walkie-talkie radio in my hand. Mm-hmm. I have my hands underneath my belly, and I'm just falling asleep standing up basically. And all of a sudden, a lovely woman, Phish fan, comes over and literally starts grabbing my stomach. And physically accosting me in her own kind, spiritual, oh, I love babies.
Oh,
and
right.
Clearly,
oh, yeah.
She was ready.
She was
ready for the show. Well, our head of security.
She was communing with your child.
Exactly. I didn't have a doula, but I think she may have offered. But our head of security saw what was going on. And he literally ran across the street and got in between the two of us and got into her face and was like, you know, what do you want? What's your problem? And ended up kicking her out before the show even started.
Oh, no.
So it is one of my most tragically sad concert experiences ever, that this poor woman just giving me good vibes. Unfortunately, didn't get to see Phish that night.
Best album, and I don't mean necessarily favorite, and you may have already answered it with the Lemonade, but.
Yeah, I think for sure that Beyoncé's Lemonade is, it just transcends any normal album. Oh my gosh, there's so many. I'm going through my CD book. And what I listened to.
You're not going through your iTunes list?
Yeah, no. I also loved D'Angelo. You know D'Angelo?
I can't imagine the song, but I know the name.
Well, he's a great artist from the – he came out in probably the late 90s. His first album, Brown Sugar, is one that's probably one of my favorites too that I can listen to over and over again.
So that would be my next question. If you had to, like, you know, the whole I'm stranded on an island with a CD player with infinite batteries and one disc.
My God.
The one that would not wear you out quickly.
Hamilton.
Oh, there you go. That's a good answer.
Right? I mean, yeah, it's long.
Yeah.
It's like 3 hours. Got lots of options. Or maybe like Bruce Springsteen, Greatest Hits. I do love Bruce too. Hmm. He's pretty special.
All right. Well, any final thoughts?
No. Thank you for letting me delve into my psyche and uncovering all of this that I've buried clearly in my life. That thank God that I have music to send me back to times and places that I don't remember. And I it's funny. I hear the Portlandia theme song. You know that show Portlandia?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That theme song is from Washed Out, that group. And for some reason, I just feel like I know it. Like it's like a deja vu moment I have when I hear that one particular song. And the fact that music can do that to you and literally transport you to a place that, you know, you mm-hmm. don't even know where it's supposed to be taking you is pretty spectacular. So,
well, I want to thank my guest. Katie Haas is the Lydia Black of the Boston Red Sox business operations here in Southwest Florida. Katie, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you, Mike.
We make Three Song Stories in the WGCU studios on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University. Richard Chinqui is the show's producer, director, and co-creator. Tara Callaghan and Anna Bejarano are our online content producers. Our executive producer is Chris Duffus. Our theme music was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. Before we go out on our parting tune, I want to remind listeners that we want your song stories. If you've got one you want to tell about a particular song, which takes you back to a particular time, place, or story, just record it on your phone and send it to mysongstory@wgcu.org. We're going to start using listener songs as our parting tunes at some point in the future. But for now, we're sticking with my parting tunes. This week's brings me back to Tallahassee in the mid-1990s. I was on a road trip with some friends and wound up in a record store there, where I bought my first ever bootleg album. It was a live Dave Matthews Band show recorded in Burlington, Vermont. It was the first stop on their latest tour. Trey from Fish actually shows up midway through, which was awesome. I'd never even seen a bootleg CD in a record store, let alone one from what was at the time one of my favorite bands. Anyway, this opening track is time travel to me for sure. I'm tooling down I-10 with my friends, heading back toward Gainesville, not a care in the world. The disc was titled Live and Dreaming, which is exactly how we felt right then. This is the first track called Seek Up. I just want to warn listeners that Dave Matthews is also a jam band like Fish, so it's 12 minutes long. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening.
Next time on Three Song Stories.
I really hoped that they would listen to the song and think that I was much deeper and more thoughtful than I actually was.
You might have been that deep.
I was not that deep. I was a puddle.